It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Religion Today with Martin Tanner, a weekly look at religion and spirituality here at home and around the world. Now, here's your host, Martin Tanner.
Welcome. This is Religion Today. I'm your host, Martin Tanner. Today's show focuses on the apparent clash that seems to happen over and over again between religion and the theory of evolution. This has always been a topic of extreme interest for me. Ever since I was a little kid, I loved to read books about dinosaurs, evolution, cavemen, those kinds of things. And as time went on, I read more and more scientific literature on the topics. And it has become a life-changing event for me. I originally believed strongly in evolution, and now I guess you could kind of describe me as agnostic, to the point where I guess I would have to say that just as believers in God, and I certainly count myself among that group, as listeners to this show would know, I just don't know how God created everything. I believe he did, but the details, I don't know. Now, when you get to science, any high school or college textbook on biology will just say, oh, yeah, evolution's true. We know it's true. And here's some examples, and just it's a done deal. We don't need God to explain anything. I have come to learn, and today I hope to show why that is just flat out not true. And today I would describe myself as completely agnostic on the scientific side, or maybe better said, the descriptive side of exactly how life came about. And I am a complete disbeliever in what most people would call evolution, because the fossil record, the science, the facts just aren't there. Let me tell you why. People today often hear the term digital information or information explosion. When you hear that, you typically think of computer chips, software code, cell phones, supercomputers, maybe even the fancy smart cars that we have today. But you don't typically think of one-celled tiny organisms or the rise of life in the world. But more than half a century ago, there was a different kind of far-reaching information revolution. Not cell phones, not computers. This happened in biology. This revolution came about by now famous scientists, Francis Crick and James Watson. Their discovery transformed our understanding of nature and life. Since the 50s, when Crick and Watson first illuminated the chemical structure and information-bearing properties of DNA, biologists have over time come to understand that living things, every bit as much as high-tech devices we have today, depend on digital information. In the case of life, this information, this digital information, is a four-character chemical code embedded within the twisting double helix we call DNA. Life couldn't reproduce or even exist without it. And because of the importance of DNA for living things to exist, because of its information, it's now become apparent that there have been all kinds of distinct information revolutions in biology throughout the history of the world. What am I talking about here? If you look at the fossil record, it's pretty clear that the earliest kinds of life were simple, and the later kinds of life are far more complex. And that's just kind of been described as, oh, evolution did that. But the significant new idea and requirement brought out by the existence or the knowledge of the existence of DNA is that each time you have more complex life, you have more complex DNA. And how did that new information get there? Let me give you an analogy. Comparing a simple-celled life to, say, humans or giraffes, whales, whatever, complex forms of life, is a little bit like comparing, in a DNA sense, for them, the amount of knowledge necessary to construct a Model T, which was little more than an engine, four wheels, steering wheel, I mean, not much more than that, with complex cars today that have keyless entry, automatic windows, airbags, safety components, navigational devices, GPS, driverless cars in some examples. I mean, the amount of knowledge to create a car today is many, many millions of times greater than the amount of information necessary to create a Model T. And similarly, in DNA, the amount of information necessary to create complex animal life like humans, elephants, giraffes, whales, and all kinds of other life forms is millions of times greater than that necessary for single-celled animals. So where did that extra information come from? This has been called the perplexing issue for biology, and it really can't be answered without reverting to creation or to God. On this subject, there's a guy who I just think is fabulous. Go find any book by Stephen Mayer. He has a PhD from Cambridge, wrote a book called Darwin's Doubt about this subject. It's absolutely fabulous. So he asks, where did the information necessary to create the first DNA come from? Discoveries in molecular biology in the 50s and 60s established that DNA contains digital information, not just information. So where did this digital information come from? Origin of life, biologists and scientists, that they just flat out do not know. Information theorist Henry Quassler made this sage comment, quote, "The creation of information is habitually associated with conscious activity," close quote. What that means is that whenever we find some kind of functioning information, whether it's a radio signal, some kind of a carved monument, on a flash drive, computer disk, smartphone, whatever it is, or produced by an origin of life scientist, some kind of an evolutionary theorist or biologist attempting to engineer a self-replicating molecule, then we trace that information back to its ultimate source. Where do we come to? We come to the mind of the scientists or some kind of intelligence found in DNA. It's just not some random process. So the discovery of this digital information in even the simplest living cells tells us that the activity of a designing intelligence is at work, of the first creation of life and thereafter, a creator or a god, if you will. More about evolution and religion. Stay tuned. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today.
Religion Today with Martin Tanner continues on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
We're back. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today. Our discussion today is centered on the apparent clash between the idea of evolution in science, which claims no need for intelligence, only random actions of nature, and on the other side, with the ideas of religion, which claim that there is a God responsible for creation. So the question then becomes, what does the fossil record tell us? What do the facts that are out there in the real world tell us about which of these two competing theories is more accurately describing the existence of life? And the thesis that I'm presenting today is that although neither science nor religion can explain exactly how life came about, other than with broad strokes by religion and saying God did it, God's the creator, the exact mechanisms or how God did it, we certainly don't know. What we can say is that the fossil record and science itself has come to the conclusion, reluctantly, that intelligence is required for creation. Now, let's talk about why I say that. Why does intelligence create the best explanation for life? Well, the process of natural selection, acting on random mutations, does so in already existing DNA. Many people, when they were in science class, they've heard the story about the finches on the Galapagos Islands and how they had different kinds of beaks than other finches. Say, oh, yep, there's evolution. Or they might say, well, you've heard the story about the moths in London, how they started out being white, and then as London got more sooty, they turned gray because why? The birds would eat all the white ones. Oh, that proves evolution. Well, the problem with that is some kind of a proof of evolution is that those are just variations with an existing gene pool. In other words, the information already exists in the DNA. There's no new information, no new DNA that is being created in those circumstances. So that does not get around the problem. It doesn't solve the problem of how DNA could come out of nothing with the origin of life, or how life could become more complex. Let me go even further into the fossil record here. If you take a look at the scientific information, I'm going to use all their numbers. The Earth's been around for about 4.5 billion years. Life on the Earth has been around for about 3.6 billion years. And after the first billion or so years of life on Earth, from 4.5 to 3.6, life began to exist in the form of simple single-celled entities. And then, all of a sudden, in the Cambrian period, not just in the whole Cambrian period, but in the first third of the Cambrian period, in this little 10 million year swath, again, using their numbers. So, stated another way, in the whole existence of the time of all existence of life on Earth, in less than 3% of that time, and the first third of the Cambrian period, all the major forms of life that we have now, I'm talking fish, insects, amphibians, reptiles, birds, mammals, all of those kinds of life just appeared in the fossil record. No apparent precursors. How do scientists explain that? That's like an explosion of life, virtually out of nothing, or at least nothing in the fossil record. So how do you explain that? You can't with random mutations. Here's another example. If you go back 3.6 billion years and say life existed in a single cell and it evolved in the primeval oceans to air-breathing mammals on land and then into whales and dolphins back in the oceans, you have to scratch your head and say, well, wait a minute. We know how often mutations occur in genes, and there just isn't enough time to go from a single cell to air-breathing mammals on land and then back into whales and dolphins in the oceans. There just isn't enough time. We can run the calculations. They just do not work. Because of some of these issues, people in evolutionary biology, who I really like and really enjoy reading, have made statements that don't seem to quite get down to the general public. For example, in 1980, clear back in 1980, this is a while ago, Harvard paleontologist, guy I really liked, Stephen Jay Gould, said Neo-Darwinism, quote, is effectively dead despite its persistence in textbook orthodoxy, close quote. What he's saying is, it's still in textbooks, but Neo-Darwinism just doesn't work. There's an evolutionary biologist at Stony Brook University and a researcher at American Museum of Natural History. Brilliant guy, Douglas Furuyama, a believer in evolutionary, said, quote, just because we don't know how evolution occurred doesn't justify doubt about whether it occurred, close quote. Really? Well, this sounds suspiciously like a faith claim to me. It kind of sounds like evolutionary religion. There's a group of scientists known as the Altenburg 16. And for a while now, they've been openly calling for a new theory of evolution because they see that mutation and natural selection just don't explain things. And so the fundamental problem confronting Neo-Darwinism, whether it's the punctuated equilibria theory or whatever new theory is out there, it's the problem of the origin of new biological information. Evolutionists often dismiss this problem as some kind of an anomaly, but it is actually huge. It's the crux of the issue. Where do you get new information for wings or feathers or eyes or blood clotting or skin or nervous system or multi-cells, if you go back far enough? These are the kinds of things that are very, very difficult to explain. So what's the best explanation at present? Because we're dealing with digital code in DNA. The best explanation is intelligence, an intelligent creator or God. If you have questions or comments about this program, if you want to throw rocks or agree with it or get more information, send me an email. Send it to martinstanner@gmail.com. I'll be happy to respond. Join me again next week, right here on Religion Today, 6:30 in the morning Sundays and 9:30 in the evening Sunday nights, or on KSL.com, Spotify, iTunes, and other great sources.